Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's IRD call on Monday the 16th of August, we have Jeremy Hitchcock, Rafik Damak, Avery Doria, Steve Metalitz, Jiantang Yao. From staff, we have Steve Sheng, myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and we have apologies today from Julie Headland. If I can also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Jeremy and Steve.
Rob Thank Hutchinson, you.
Sorry, Steve. Rob Hutchinson has also just joined the call. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, Bob. Hi, Rob.
Morning.
Morning. Thank you, everyone, for joining. On today's IRD call, Jeremy is our chair is on the line. Jeremy, do you have any agenda?
This is Jeremy. Not specifically, but I guess it's to continue going through, getting to some consensus on a few items and towards an actual report.
Okay. In our last meeting, we discussed about variants, the handling of variants, and I've also sent out a summary of the IRD working group discussions so far. Where do you want to start? We can go over the document, or we can continue to talk about variants.
I think there was about the same group of people on the last call, so we could keep going on that, or slightly move on. What is does the group have any particular preference? Guess not. Why don't we pick up on a quick summary on the variants from last time and go from there.
Okay. So where we left off of variants last time. So variants are essentially characters of different form, the same meaning character but of different form in a language. And usually these variants, for example, for Chinese or for Indians, they could reach tens. If not hundreds, probably tens. It's a 10 variant for a given U label name. It's a good number. It also depends how long the domain label is. And the question we discuss is what to do in Whois. How do we display them? Whether it's not a question how, but whether we allow the capability to display and query. And it seems where we left off, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is we are calling for study of the issue of variants, and that's where we left off. And the study could be, done by the IRD working group, or it could be done by ICANN. That's where we left off.
And this is Jeremy, and for the purposes of kind of just having a general sense of where the how much variant or what the going forward strategy or desires between us tackling that issue or having it be a staff briefing, what does the group feel? Avery, what's your opinion?
Sorry, my attention wandered.
Oh, that's all right. Curious on just trying to get a sense of the flavor from the last meeting and the variance and whether or not it's a something that this group tackles or something that
right.
We kind of leave
okay.
up for future groups.
I guess, strangely enough, I would say neither. There's so many groups at the moment that are facing variants as part of their discussion. We're talking about it in the JIG. We're talking about it here. In different terms, the IETF is trying to tackle what one does in, you know, cases of what we're calling variants and what are and aren't the requirements for dealing with that. So I don't think it's something that can be discussed just here, but nor is it something that we can put off and say somebody else is going to take care of. So I think at the very least, this group, in terms of its problem, has to be able to express what its understanding and requirements for variants are. And then we need some sort of venue where we can bring together the various different perspectives that are coming from these different groups into what our requirements are, what is needed. And, you know, then others in collaboration can figure what is possible, and we can go back and forth. But at this point, so many, I mean, it is like the problem of the day almost in a lot of places, and I don't think we can, I don't think we can punt on it and ignore it.
Okay.
Sure,
Steve?
That was useful.
That was.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, Steve?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, Steve Metallitz, sorry. I'm just trying to kind of pull the room and get a gauge for what the thought on variants are of how much further to go down or how much further to discuss on the topic.
Hi, this is Steve Metallitz. I'm sorry I was on mute there for a minute.
Oh, no worries.
I would tend to support what Aubrey said. I think these variance issues coming up in so many fora, there needs to be some unified way to deal with it.
This is Jeremy. So you kind of the similar in perspective to Aubrey, which is this group can't be the final authority on it, but should participate in some sort of more global or larger conversation on variants.
Yeah, this is Steve Metallitz. I would say so, with the caveat that since I've missed the last few calls here, I'm certainly not up to speed on this issue the way others on the call are.
Okay. Rafiq? What's your thought on variants?
I think I agree with Aubrey. Maybe we need to see another working group, because I am also in the CHIC, and so to have maybe common opinion with all this group point. Let's say, to see with other, maybe to we can ask them or something like that.
This is Steve Shang. It seems Tina Dan from ICANN is forming a kind of an internal variant group. So, for example, the staff supporting various working groups that touches on variants, we get together and discuss these issues. So this is for your information. I don't know whether that will help the IRD group or not.
This is Jeremy. It's certainly good to hear that it's not a problem that's only faced by us, but trying to determine what are the salient points that are related to who is only, and I think are important in terms of there's an obvious choice in terms of what, how verbose who is implementations are, or and how much data is given back, and that's something that I think I guess is helps weigh whether or not we recommend one particular route or another. And I think in the end it will be there's a choice and there's a continuum, and based on what other people think in terms of the variant issue, where or not. What's that?
On the other hand, though, I think so. I was thinking maybe what we can take. So I know there are some disagreements and the variants. You know how variants are handled in different languages. But on the other hand, I tend to feel that as an R&D group, we don't need to resolve those definitional issues and how variants are handled in different languages. We can take them as, you know, simply as given, and define, you know, kind of the who is requirement. So here's what I mean. I think no matter how variants are handled in different languages, they probably end up in two types of variants. One variant is called activated variants. I mean, those are the variants that will be put into DNS zone file and subsequently be able to resolve, you know, through queries. So if someone were to query a IDN U label, a variant, you know, if it's put into the zone file, it can resolve. And the other type of variants is called, you know, reserve variants. You know, I mean, these are not put into the zone file, but no one else can register them. I think different countries or even different language groups, you know, will define, you know, what is activated and what is reserved. But generally, those are the two categories. And maybe what the IRD group can do is to take this as given. So, you know, we're not to define what is reserved and how to reserve them. But we'll take what is given and say, you know, how do we display activated variants and how do we display reserved variants? That's my understanding so far. Limited.
This is Jeremy. Yeah, I've always thought of it as when you're interacting with a Whois client, if you query for, let's say, a name that's based on one of the reserved or one of the names that isn't actually registered in DNS, do you actually get back results that relate to the result to the actual name that's in DNS? By the virtue of the fact that they have that you're querying based on a variant which does exist, or that would be on a reserve list, you actually get the one that's the actual entry. Would that also be the case?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's up to the working group to decide. Yeah. But I think the consensus last time in the working group is if a name is in the DNS, for example, if it's activated variant, Whois query should allow that. They should be able to query any name that's in the DNS and get results back. The difference is, you know, what if name simply reserved but not in the DNS? Should we enable the query capacity or should we not? I mean, in that case, what would we return?
This is Jian Kang Yao. Personally, I agree with Steve's points. There is two words, some are put into the DNS for DNS resolution. Others are
for reservation. So we do something how to display them. About the warrants definition, I think it is very difficult to have a accurate correct definition, because different organizations and different country may have a different warrants definition. So if we class the warrants into two forms, active forms in DNS and reserved forms, we how to display them? I think it is a simple question. Thank you.
This is Jeremy. So it seems like at least the question of do we display every variant, the answer to that seems like it's for the most part a no. It doesn't sound like that there's any real desire for all the variants to come back, but it seems like if you query for a name, you're given the actual entry, based on previous conversations, it looks like you're given the A label and the U label back. And if you're querying on a variant that matches an actual name, then you're given back the actual name and the variant. Does that seem like a point to agree on?
Yeah,
I guess I didn't understand. I didn't understand all of the scenarios you put there. The querying of any variant should return all variants. Is that one of the options?
No, I'm saying specifically that if you query for a variant, so the case is, so you query for a name and you get the name back. You query for a variant which is related to an actual name, and you get the actual name returned, but not all of the not all the possible variants.
Now, I guess the consensus we've had before is that if you query for a name, you get all the registered variants. The question was, what does whois do when queried on the reserved variants? Maybe I was wrong about what we had as a discussion last week or last time.
Right, and I'm saying that if you do a query on one of those reserved names, you get the actual you get the corresponding name back.
Yeah, I think as a use case from a user usability viewpoint, if I'm using whois to verify the availability of a name and a non-registered variant does not respond in whois, I think you have a very strange system at that point, because then I can't tell a name that is reserved but not registerable. In other words, so I guess that's
well, are you using whois to determine whether a domain is registered or whether or not a name or looking for the associated contact information of a domain?
Well, I guess in this use case, I'm saying that somebody would be using whois to determine whether or not a name is available to be registered. Okay.
So if you do a search for a variant which cannot be reserved, and you get back the name that is the reason for essentially the record that exists that would prevent that registration, then I would think that would be consistent with the behavior that you get with WHOIS, which is either a name is returned, which says that it's not available for registration, or there's no record that's respond. There's no record that corresponds with a query. So then it should be available for registration.
Right, and the question is, for the reserved variants, do you get the root name of why that is reserved, or do you just get back? Do you get back the name is not in use? Do you get back the name is reserved? What do you get back in the case of a reserved variant, a query on a reserved variant?
I think I would be saying that it'd be the root name would be the name that would be given back.
This is Aubrey. When you say the name would be given back, you also include that all the information on that name, or just a reference that name is not used because it is a variant of this other name? Or you mean you would substitute the whole WHOIS record for the registered name?
I suppose two choices. Yeah.
I would think it would be the actual name. It would be as a substitute. In I guess the kind of the English ASCII version would be, if you submitted a query all lowercase for a name, you're given back the actual record for the uppercase name. Semantically, they're the same, and so I guess trying to use a similar type of logic for variants, I guess that would be how I would initially come to what would actually get returned if you use a variant that's related to a reserve name.
Yeah, but at the same again, in that case, they would resolve the same. Which in this case, there's no necessity that they would resolve the same.
Yes, I think that's what Jeremy is suggesting. You know, but then I think there's also issues. So, for example, if a user, type in a reserved variant, and he or she sees the WHOIS record, and then he or she may want to say, well, now it's in the WHOIS, let me put it into the browser. And when he or she put it into the browser, this name could not be resolved. And then would that lead to confusion? Because he sees the right there, but it couldn't be resolved by the browser. I mean, because what do others think of this scenario? No thoughts? So I think what Avery and Jeremy was essentially outlining two proposals, right, if I understand correctly. What Jeremy is outlining is a query of reserved variants should return the original WHOIS record. I mean, the lowercase and uppercase. If you query the lowercase, you should get the uppercase, back or vice versa. And Avery, if I understand, were you correct? what you are suggesting is when you query a reserved variant, we do not display the whole records, but we put an indication that, you know, this is a variant of XYZ. Is that what you're suggesting?
I was asking the question, but yes, I guess I would tend towards that unless there was some sort of guarantee that they did resolve, like upper and lower case resolved, which, of course, is not necessarily a safe assumption. So, yes, I guess I would tend that way, but I was more asking the question,
okay,
trying to differentiate the two cases. And to add a third thing, even on the unregistered variant, I think we have to perhaps think about going a step further because it isn't necessarily registrable for. It may not have been reserved, but that, or does it, is a question I'm, I guess, I'm again asking. Does that mean just because it wasn't reserved that it therefore can be registered? Because there may be policies elsewhere up and down the road that would or would not support that, even without reservation.
This is Jian Kang Yao. My suggestion is if you query the reserved variants, then who should display a message your query name is reserved, then display the active variants. Thank you.
So you're agreeing with Avery's proposal?
Yeah.
Okay. Avery, I didn't get your last point about registered, unregistered.
Right. The last point has to do with the names that aren't reserved, and maybe I shouldn't be talking about it now, but wait for later, is there's a presumption now that if something is not reserved and is not registered, it is therefore available.
Right.
And I'm questioning whether that assumption remains true in an unreserved variant. Might that variant not actually be available, but be unassignable due to some other policy somewhere along the road? So do we have to think and change the notions of what it means that just because there isn't a record does not mean it is necessarily available?
I think that's true, or that is something that is going to happen where there will be names that cannot be registered because of they're too similar to a name that already exists.
Right.
And so I guess the question is if who is DNS contact information and does a web address resolve, like right now we have a pretty consistent behavior between a record existing in one system all being the same, and there's one-to-one mappings everywhere. And in a variant scheme, that's not always the case, and you might get to cases where you get records back and resolving no actual DNS that can be resolved and no web address that would exist. And I guess the hope is the goal with any sort of proposal is to make them as consistent as possible.
Right.
Or I guess that's an underlying assumption. I don't know whether or not that the group agrees with that. But I think that would be the case, that we'd want them at least somewhat consistent with what the current working reality is.
Yep. Rafik, do you have any thoughts? Go ahead. Okay. So what do we want to do, I guess? Jeremy?
Well, I guess to try to come to some closure, I guess, if it'd be possible for staff to come up with a quick rundown of some different scenarios in terms of how variants would play into the how verbose or how much data WHOIS gives back would be helpful, and we could come to some closure on this particular side.
Okay. Closure, I mean, proposal means the alternative, the ones that we outlined on the phone call today, right?
Yeah, the alternatives in that way that we can look and decide based on the pros and cons of each one, what's the right way. So just seeing what the implications are, and then in a future phone call, determining which proposal seems like the best thing to use going forward.
Okay. That's fine. We can certainly do that. We'll do that. Okay. So, we still have about half an hour. What do we want to do?
I wasn't present for the call getting bumped a half hour, but certainly not preferred to me. I'm guessing there was a scheduling reason for moving up a little bit later.
Oh, yeah. We can discuss that. So one of the reasons is some participants have asked to see if the time can be moved later, because on the West Coast time, it's the phone call is 7 o'clock in the morning, and because of this global nature, it's right now it's 11 o'clock, 7 o'clock a call in the morning for a U.S. West Coast means 10 p.m. for Asia, for Hong Kong, for China, and we're trying to figure out a compromise.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but even that, I mean, the person who said still couldn't make it at 7:30 a.m. So I guess this time will be inconvenient for U.S. West Coast, but if it's too late, it would be very inconvenient for Asia. So I guess, what do we do about that?
It's probably no ideal time, and I'm just curious on the half hour, but no worries. Looking through my notes. Oh, so if there's nothing else on time, we can go back to the actual subject matter. So just looking through my notes, and I'm trying to see where we are on the working group discussion. Because I think what we'll do is we could do a quick rundown on what left there is to discuss, and then maybe call for adjournment a little bit on the early side. I think we came to some sort of consensus around the A label, U label.
Yeah. Actually, do you want to go through the document the staff has prepared? Maybe that would bring everyone on the same page quickly.
Sure. This is the 30 July document, which was the kind of the staff summary of where our current discussions had brought us.
Yes.
I'm not going to go too much to the preamble, but basically that there's no standard that exists for the submission and display of registration records, registration data, which includes contact information, host name, sponsor and registrar, and domain name status. So we and the general goals as charted with the feasibility and sustainability of introducing submission and display specifications that deal with internationalized registration data. So we're only looking at what's the feasibility, sustainability. We're not looking at any sort of policy outcome. This is more of a kind of a technical primer or an expert opinion for the GNSO to consider this. And this is also in conjunction with ESSAC, just in terms of a internationalized content coming out and being more prevalent, and there's not a standard form to display this. So we broke it down into a few high-level issues. So one of them was the capabilities needed for HUA service in the IDN environment. Working group members generally agreed that there was value in offering users with the ability to use U-labels, which is the Unicode form of an IDN label, or A-labels, which is the ASCII form, as they choose in HUA's queries. Users may most often prefer U-labels since this is more visually recognizable and familiar than A-label strings, but users of a command line may want to submit and display A-labels, just in terms of keyboard accessibility, I guess. So I'm assuming that that's still something that we fundamentally agree on. Okay. The next bit that we came up with was the how and the breakdown of A labels and U labels in terms of what pieces of content were displayed in what formats. So the kind of related to that, we're looking mostly at port 43 Whois clients, but I think one thing that maybe hasn't been discussed as much is the name-based query tools and what their specifications are. I think that their behavior also is a little bit more varied in how they respond, and especially because some port 43 Whois clients will actually say, go use a name-based Whois client.
Name-based Whois client?
What's that?
I mean, what do you mean by name-based Whois client?
Web-based.
Okay.
Yeah, I always get the actual one. I think that's called a web-based web query tool in the RA. I can't remember, but it's basically a web version for Whois.
Okay.
So for the actual Whois, I think we've come up with a couple of statements. Port 43 Whois clients must be able to accept a user query of domain name in either a U-label or A-label format. Whois clients must be able to display a result of both U and A-labels for domain names, and variants of a single A or U-label query should be returned.
I think this document was sent out before the variant discussion. So it will be revised accordingly to what the working group has reached consensus on, how to display variants.
Yeah, which is the assumption that all variants are returned. That part, I think, has been discussed either a week or two after, before this, but before this session today, but after this document was sent out.
Right.
And then the question of what do we do for reserve names is that's something that still has to be decided.
Yeah.
So kind of going through the document in terms of the general high-level preliminary recommendations, that's something that people are familiar with and generally agree on. Okay. So one of the wrinkles with this particular set of recommendations is that the existing Whois protocol has no mechanism for indicating a character set. So I think that what will come as a result of this is that there'll be a proposal to be sent to the IETF for considerations to modify, extend, or do something with the Port 43 WHOIS, and we've had a couple of conversations about some methods of how that might come to pass.
Yes. This is a what do other people on the call think about this recommendation? Hello? No?
We'll go around again. We'll do it in the same order last time. Aubrey?
Don't start with me. Please, get me. I'll come back.
It's alphabetical order.
Yeah, reverse alphabet works good, too.
All right, we'll do reverse alphabet. I don't have the list in front of me, but Rafiq, why don't you go first?
Yeah. Rafiq, can you please repeat your point? I didn't get it.
Sure. We're going over the staff summary, and one of the recommendations is that because of the working group's position on Port 43 WHOIS clients being able to accept queries in U-label or A-label formats, and they should also display the A-label and U-label formats, then WHOIS doesn't have a mechanism for indicating a preferred character set. So as a result, WHOIS would have to get modified and extended, and the way that we would do that is to have a proposal sent to IETF to ask them about extending the protocol so that way that functionality is included. And we're just trying to get a sense from the working group members of whether or not that's what the level of consensus on that particular topic is. So you're first. You get to say whether or not you agree with that.
Okay. You mean to send to ITF to request them to make that change? But I'm not sure about the process there, but I thought that it's... So how do you see that we will request that from the ITF?
We would just have a single page or maybe a couple of pages that say that we'd like to have that the IDNs, WHOIS was a protocol that did not have internationalized domains that was as part of its initial design and an initial assumption, and needs to be extended in order to have that type of support, and to look forward to, you know, what type of modifications would come from it.
I agree for the idea, but I'm not sure how we will handle that with the ITS. Maybe Avrit more know better than me about that. So, but I agree for that to the ITF about that.
My understanding was, correct me if I'm wrong, is for IETF is someone come up with a solution and go through the standard process. Is that how it works?
This is Aubrey. What I was doing was trying to find out the last time anybody in the IETF actually talked about WHOIS.
It was a long time ago.
A long time. The last I could find is 2004. That the WHOIS mailing list stopped being active.
Yeah, the working group is no longer active and has not been active for some time.
And that's what gives me pause. This would be something that would be sent almost, as opposed to putting out an internet draft. When there is an existing working group that says, hey, we'd like, this is almost going to IAB level. And the notion of getting the IAB to suggest any further work on WHOIS is just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and
so while I agree from an ICANN perspective we would want that, I don't see how we would get it. I guess I'm echoing what Rafiq said.
And I'm separating my... I'm in the capacity of a working group chair on this because I'm not a particular fan of this type of approach, because I think what's going to happen is we're going to send a proposal to, or we'll ask for some increase of feature, and we'll either be referred to, we'll be basically be told no, and we'll be referred to Iris and CRISP.
Yes,
but that's you know, for the recommendation for having Hooey's port 43 able to accept user queries and display those user queries, and that's the right way to go forward in order to have those things occur.
Well, there is another way. I mean, and this is Aubrey again, and that's that. Given that we understand that the IETF is not about to do it, there's absolutely no block on someone else technically suggesting the solution and you know, doing basically proposing their own solution as a way to do it. So if I can truly believe that, and you know, and I don't mean I can as just us or as just staff, but, you know, we go through the whole process of figuring out that, yes, this is a recommendation that we want, is we can certainly pay to have somebody develop that solution and work through the process of independent, you know, independent submission. And so that can be done. And that would be the decision that I think we'd have to make. Because I think you're right. There's not a prayer that someone would do a working group to do this. Now,
right.
Whether an independent submission that was well thought out, well done, and, you know, an optional thing would make it through the standardization gauntlet, I think is an open question. And, you know, there's all kinds of variables in whether that would work or not. I'm not sure that I'm suggesting it. I'm sitting here more like, you know, part of my life is working with various groups and companies, sort of looking at protocols and figuring out whether it's worth doing an independent submission on something. And so I'm taking that sort of consultant view to it. And that strikes me as the only way one could do it. And I don't know whether it would fly or not.
So, Avery, what you are suggesting is to have interest parties to submit a proposal, right?
What I'm suggesting is that that is one possible way to do it if, at the end of the day, ICANN decided this is what we needed. I'm not sure that I am personally advocating it, but I'm looking at it and saying that is the solution path if we wanted one, I think.
Okay. So you want to give ICANN the first right of refusal, is that?
Well, first of all, my notion is we are ICANN, right? So we as this group, if this group says this is something that should happen to 43, and it goes through ESSAC and GNSO and board, and they all say, yay, this is something we should do, then yes, then the next step becomes how do we do it? And this independent figure out the solution ourselves, whether it's the people within the ICANN staff who have 43 talents, or it's some external consultant that is a whiz-bang, you know, at Who Is Protocols and such, did it, but go through that path. I'm not sure where I stand on it, but from my consultant perspective, the thing people often pay me money for, that would be what I would see as a solution path.
Okay. I mean, I agree with you. The only thing I'm raising the question is whenever, you know, people will just criticize ICANN immediately saying, well, ICANN is really not a technical body, you know, they shouldn't do this. So just be I'm just mindful of that.
This is Steve Metallitz. Could I get in the queue here?
Yeah, go for it, Steve.
Just two observations on this. One, I think what's in front of us says the working group recommend interested parties to submit a proposal. So we're really just saying if people are interested in pursuing this, they can go through the IETF route, which I hear many people saying would be very unlikely to produce anything, but they certainly would have the option to do that. My other question here really is, would we really want this? I mean, for example, elsewhere in this document, we have statements about how certain things should be displayed, that the name of the registrar should be displayed in ASCII. Would that be trumped by a change in the protocol that says you can have a preferred character set for the display of the results so that someone could say, I don't want this to be displayed in ASCII? I'm just not sure whether this, if there were such a new standard, it would really be consistent with what we're recommending elsewhere in the document. So that would be a reason, in my view, to just kind of leave it where it is, that the working group recommends to interested parties, it could just point out to interested parties that they have this option, but not having ICANN itself pursue this. Thank you.
Steve, I think this, let me try to understand. I think what you're saying is you're concerned about is, okay, if someone were to, when they extend the protocol or they change the protocol, it may make impossible some of the recommendations this working group does? Is that
It's possible depending on what the change was.
Right. I think then maybe, whenever whoever does that work, we have to say, this is what the IRD comes up, whatever protocol change you make, you better not, destroy this recommendation.
Yeah.
I think would that be a fair way to go? I mean, just let them know that, this is what the recommendation is.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, we're just making recommendations at this point, but if this went forward to the IETF, then they would probably ought to take into account whether what they would be putting in place was consistent with our recommendation.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's good. Yeah. Another thing is, do we want to talk about IRIS and, like, RESTful who is? In here? Like in the interim report, do we want to spell out those?
This is Aubrey. On that question, I think what we were doing, and I think we may be getting to that point, was first coming up with the requirements and then starting to look at, can WHOIS do this? And if it can't, then looking at, well, what are the solutions? Okay, one we just talked about is fix WHOIS. The other is, what else can do it? So perhaps, at the point at which we've gotten to the end of these are our requirements, it does make sense to take a look at the other tools, although I don't know it's necessarily in the mandate of this group, but take a look at the other tools and see, yeah, maybe that one can do it, or no, it can't. So I guess I'm saying, yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I know I'm so definitive today, sorry.
Here, maybe. Any other thoughts?
I think it'd be worth doing, going through and saying why. WHOIS fails because of its ability to interact at all with U labels. So we should look at other systems that, and I think that the IETF would say, there's a registry data system that that they have worked on more recently that does have that capability, what are the we should look at that in terms of how does that fit the functionality and the spec of what we're looking for?
Okay. Right here, yes. Okay. One of the reasons that, you know, we don't have any adoption of Iris is registries and registrars simply do not have the interest. I mean, the economics is wrong. The incentives are misaligned. You know, registries and registrars who have to put up a large cost developing Iris does not benefit from an improved UIS. It is the IPC community, the law enforcement, that benefits that. And I mean, we can say about Iris, but, you know, we can, you know, mention it again and other replacement protocols, but unless someone work on the economics incentives issue, you know, I think we're not going to move very far with Iris. Anyway, that's my personal thought.
This is Jeremy. I mean, I'm going to speak somewhat out of turn, but it's also the currently mandated system, and Iris is more complicated and probably more costly, but right now WHIS is the current system that is mandated by the community use. I don't know what the... I can't remember what's specifically contracted for the GTLD registries, but at least for registrars, it's basically those couple paragraphs that say how port 43 and the web-based name query tool exist, and it's just past precedent that has really defined what that actually means, and because there's more IDN that exists out in the world, there's been people that have had to kind of do their own thing in order to make that actually work, to serve registrants and the community at large.
Right. Any other thoughts on this recommendation? We're 3 minutes past the time.
Yeah, this is Steve Metallitz. I'm going to have to drop off the call at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it seems that we want to keep the recommendation the way it is, or...
It seems like we want to keep the recommendation the way it is, and I guess what we would put together is a couple of... so kind of the couple of things that came out of this was that we're going to look at how variants play, and then the second one is that it seems like this will go into our final report, which is a potential solution section, and we at least have two solutions that are modifications to WHOIS, and another one is looking at Iris and seeing how that fits. So I think that's something that should get explored, is a little bit of background on Iris and why it works or why it doesn't work, why it's partially used by some of the world, why there's only one implementation that exists for it. I think
okay. That'd
be a good topic for next call.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so any other further thoughts? Hearing none, I want to recommend adjourn the call. Thank you so much for your participation, especially if you're in Asia this late hour of the day. But for everyone else, I know all of you have in multiple working groups at ICANN. So speaking from the staff perspective, I really appreciate your participation.
Cool. Thank you as well. And we'll see everyone next time.
Yep.
Yep. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.